Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
All right, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
In today's program, we're talking with a caller who is trying to figure out how much should I have in stocks versus bonds as I'm about to retire?
Yeah, an age-old question. We're since the beginning of time.
From Stone Age time. How much should I have in stocks?
This topic has got us fired up, which is we have an annuity wholesaler calling our firm suggesting that we sell an 11%
yep.
commission
11%
product.
Commission. Stick around for this. You won't want to miss it. Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us as we talk about the world of finance. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have some advisors you're working with now, or you're doing everything on your own, just like another opinion, we would love to hear from you and glad you're joining us today. And our whole goal is to help educate people. As people have more understanding and more knowledge, they make better decisions and they are able to spot fraudsters and tricksters and stuff a little more easily as well.
Yeah, in fact, we gave a workshop, presentation to our clients a couple weeks ago called Retiree Beware. I actually gave it myself where we talked about the scams that take place in the marketplace because most of our clients are either close to retirement or retired, and they are the most hit on group.
Yep.
Or viaticals or big old fat life insurance policies or index annuities. We got such great feedback from it. We're actually doing one for the public, a retiree. So it will be on our website when the dates will be, but it is an educational, informational.
Yes. And if you'd like to be part of the program today, got a question for us. 1-888-2-HANSON. You can join the program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And before we're going to go to the calls here in a moment, before we get started with the calls, I have a guy I've been running with for almost 20 years, 19 years, I think. Phenomenal runner. And I've been a runner for a long time. And he was a highway patrolman, California. You can retire at age 50. So he had been planning his retirement. In the last couple of years, he started by doing some coaching. He kind of coached me over the years, frankly.
Age 50, he retired.
Yes. But he knew, because a couple years ago, he kind of talked about this, and he knew he didn't want to, like, quit work, like, just go sit on the beach. And one thing he said to me, I said, man, I see a lot of cops that retire young, and a lot of them just sit around and drink all day, and it's not healthy. They get divorced.
They fall into the bottle.
That's what he said. He said, so I need to figure out a career for myself after my retirement. Now, 50 is still pretty young. Anyway, so he started this coaching business. So my point is, I ran with them this week, and he said to me, Scott, he says, I'm having more fun now than I ever have because my work is exactly what I want to be doing work-wise. And he says, it's just like you talk about on the radio and been talking about with people. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, well, he says, having some plan as you transition into retirement, having something set up so that you have responsibilities on a regular basis.
Purpose.
People you're accountable to. And he says, I've got almost 40 clients. I've got a lot of people I'm accountable. But he says, I'm having more fun now than I've ever had.
And so he's charging them a fee.
Yes.
Not probably enough for him to support himself.
I don't know. This fee's not cheap.
Your friend's charging you?
I don't know if I put my fees the same as everybody else.
Okay. All right.
Let's just say that I have coffee with them periodically on financial planning stuff.
Okay.
And
got it.
So it might be a little
okay
quid pro quo. Maybe it's not
just between two friends.
Yeah.
But so the interesting.
But I don't want to state. I don't want to state publicly that I'm getting a friend's pass.
Got
because he's got other clients.
Yes, I get that.
That's why I'm going to state again that we meet periodically on his financial matters.
Okay, so.
And I don't charge him for that.
So he, your friend.
My point is, not this other stuff that we're off track on. My point is, he just said to me how valuable that process that he'd gone through transition into retirement.
But he started it before he retired.
Yes. He started that thought process well before retirement. And what am I going to do in retirement when I've got this?
And he was lucky because he actually was one of those 50% that chose a retirement date and left on that particular
correct.
Date.
And had a passion for something because started working towards that.
Approximately 50% of the population leaves the workforce before they expected to. Either through their own situation or the company's or the government situation, whoever they work for has had a change of plan.
We see it all the time.
Yeah.
Which is why it's important to take the time ahead of time, plan ahead of time for your retirement transition. So even if you think, some people say they never want to retire. Fine. But it's important to be in the position so that you could retire if suddenly your spouse came down with
at least financially.
Or you came down with some health issue.
Yeah. Financially, you need to go through that exercise.
Yeah. So, in any case. But I think I do get a friend's discount for my running.
Do you? Are you running a lot? Have you run any marathons recently?
I'm doing Boston Marathon again this year, and I'm guiding a blind friend of mine, visually impaired friend of mine.
Through the whole marathon?
Yes. And I'm not quite trained up for it, so it should be interesting.
Is the runner you have to be? You have to be faster than the runner, then.
Well, if I'm too much faster, he's got a problem. So I have to be the same speed as the runner.
Got it.
Right. So it's in 3 weeks, and 3 weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks. Whatever. Middle of April, and so yes, I am going to be guiding him through the Boston Marathon.
Well, have fun. You've done the marathon a couple times in Boston, have you not?
No, I've done it once.
Oh.
And this will be my second time. But my son's at school there, and we run right by the campus he's at.
Is your son running it with you?
No.
Does your son run?
He says it's the biggest party day they have in Boston. And
Boston's, they have St. Patrick's Day. How can the Boston Marathon be a bigger party day than St. Patrick's Day in Boston? 50% of the population has some Irish heritage in Boston.
That's why I don't like going to Boston.
The Irish.
Mr. McLean.
The Irish.
If you want to be part of the program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's talk with Linda. Linda, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes.
Hi, Linda.
How are you today?
We are wonderful.
You sound it. I've got a question for you. I will be 70. And I want to know, how much should my portfolio hold in stocks versus treasury bonds, that type of thing?
That's a great question.
That's a good question.
It really is. It sounds simple, but it's
not. I'm having a difficult time, and I just changed with an investor that I've been with for about 20 years, and I just got tired of him keeping over 60% of my account in cash.
In cash?
In cash.
Oh, what were you paying him for?
Well, that's what I said. I could do the same thing, put it under my pillow, and...
So, literally cash, not like fixed income or real...
And you would know the man. He's one of the top 100 in the state.
Oh, so let's start with you, because the right answer to the question isn't a formula. It has to do with you and your emotions and your experience.
And by the way, one of the formulas is you take 100 minus your age, and
that's the amount that you should have in equities, which means that you should, based on your age 70 and my quick math skills, you should, based on this
30,
formula, you should have 30-70. but that we don't follow that formula because it ignores the
fact
that
things.
Everyone is different. So tell us about your investment experience. You've already
We have clients that are much older than you that are very conservative, and we have clients much older than you that are very aggressive, like very aggressive.
Oh, I have a 78-year-old that's 90% equities. And the reason being is he's not investing for himself. He's investing for his children and his grandchildren.
Because he's not going to spend all his money his lifetime.
Correct. He knows he isn't.
Yeah.
So let's.
And that's my problem.
Oh.
I do not touch my investments.
How big is this little nest egg?
A million.
Okay.
A little over a million.
And you're not taking any distributions at all?
No. I'll have to starting this year because I'll turn 70 in May. But I'm going to turn around and put them right back into the trust.
Got it. And how much money of this is in IRAs and versus not IRAs?
Over 800,000 IRAs.
Got it.
Of that, I think 68 is a Roth.
Okay.
Because when we were doing it, Roth just started.
And
then the rest is in a trust, which is a little over 200,000.
Have you been converting to a Roth each year the last few years?
No, because I don't work. I can't.
Oh, yeah. You can convert. How much?
Oh.
What's your income?
My income is just Social Security and retirement.
How big is your retirement?
About, let's see, five times. About, let me calculate again. About 65,000
between the two of them.
Between everything, I get my husband's, mine, and his Social Security because his was larger, and I get it all. I have no taxes taken out of it. I pay estimated taxes.
Why?
Out of the trust for it.
Why?
Because I want the full amount. Being I'm not taking anything out of the trust at all.
Okay, so this new advisor.
Do you have a bypass trust or an AB trust?
It's an AB.
Got it. Okay. That's why.
Got it.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Have you so you were right in firing.
The Roth conversion doesn't make sense. She's an unmarried woman at $65,000 a year. The Roth conversion doesn't make sense. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The thing, if you aren't spending these dollars.
And everything is paid for. My house has been paid for 20 years.
And now, if you were sitting in our office, what we would do is we'd put a portfolio together and then we'd stress test it for you. And what that stress test means is, if the market falls by 20%, this is what we could possibly expect your
portfolio
to perform.
Or if we had another financial crisis, or let's say you had this portfolio during that last financial crisis.
This is how it would have performed, approximately how it would have performed.
And part of this is to get to a point where you have a good understanding of what, because the 60% and 30%, that doesn't mean anything, right?
Right.
What we're talking about is $1 million bucks. How much can that $1 million fall in value?
And how will you react? Yes. So if the market, if your portfolio is off 15%, 15% sounds pretty benign, but it's $150,000.
So
how would you respond? Would you stay invested?
I wouldn't like it.
Would you stay
No one's going to like that.
Would you stay invested?
Well, that's what this new gentleman is telling me. Yeah. You know, you have been way too conservative. You're not even keeping up with inflation.
The question is, would you stay invested? If your portfolio was down $150,000 in a six-month period, would you?
I think you have to because it fluctuates that much.
There you go.
You would have to. You don't pull out when it's low. You pull out when it's high.
There you go. All right. So you're answering the questions for yourself. So ask.
I don't know if there's a right or there's
now,
no.
Would I like it? No.
Of course.
Would
not.
I be calling? Yes.
Oh, you would call.
That's fine.
Which is fine. That's what you pay the advisor for.
Yeah.
There's no perfect answer.
Not, yeah, I'd go 50-50.
What percentage did you have in stocks up until now?
Some of that was bonds. I'd have to look at the wheel.
But less than 30%?
Sure. Huh?
Less than 30%?
Probably.
I would
probably
go
28 or something.
Or 60.
I might do 60-40. I might.
60 stocks, 40.
Maybe. Yeah, I might.
Like treasuries? Because bonds aren't doing anything.
Well, treasuries are doing even. I mean, I'd have a diversify. I wouldn't just pick. I personally wouldn't say stick 60% in the total stock market index and 40% in the treasuries.
Yeah,
that's correct.
I'd have a diversified fixed income portfolio as well, a variety of different type of fixed income.
And I would, and as long as you understood the downside, right? Because the upside always takes care of itself. The upside always takes care of itself.
Yeah, everyone likes the upside.
Yeah, no one. I've been doing this for 25 plus years. I have never received a single phone call where someone called and said they were making too much money.
We did have a call last. We didn't come to you, but to an advisor. And someone called and said, my account was up this much. I think I may be too aggressively invested.
Oh.
So we've had one.
Oh. And they want to rebalance.
And, we do that on an ongoing basis anyway. So in your portfolio, I'd go between 50 and 60% in equities.
And you could always say, Linda, so it took you 20 years to get here, right? You could always say, over the next 5 years, I'm going to slowly ratchet up. So, you know, I'm in whatever percentage today. If my goal is to get to 60%, if I'm in 40% today, I'm going to bump it up a bit each year over the next 5 years. That's a strategy. There's no perfect strategy, right? These are just designed to reduce some risk and shock to you.
So ask your current advisor to build a stress test. In fact, we have it on our portfolio. If your current advisor actually doesn't have the ability, have them go to our website. And don't we have it still up there?
No, they can't actually use the tool.
Oh, that's correct. You have to send us the portfolio, and then we build it.
We're not just going to give away our tools.
Give it away.
Yeah. All right. We appreciate the call, Linda. Great work.
Great work. I have another real quick question. All right. If you put these portfolios together, I have a funny feeling when he did them, he had like low risk, middle risk, high risk, that kind of thing. And I think he took people and just like questioned them, what, you know, like I didn't want a lot of risk, but I wanted some movement, right?
Uh-huh.
I think he put like maybe 100 or 200 in that. So when he changed one of us, he changed all of us. Do you do your accounts that way, or do you actually physically do each account individually?
We have, I don't know, 40 or 50 different model portfolios.
Yeah.
And then that we have seven of these. I don't know what percentage have some customization to it.
There's
almost
some,
half or something.
And there's 7,000 individuals. So over, something like
that. But we have very robust technology that monitors each portfolio individual.
Answer to the question is no, we don't do it like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the way you describe
it. And you do have programs or whatever that help you with what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we have people that sit in rooms and stare at screens.
Lots of screens.
Oh, okay.
But not that we can predict. Okay, not that we can predict the markets.
I don't know how you would do this today. This market is so crazy. I don't know how you've done it the last 5 years.
Oh, it's you.
It's always crazy.
There is a heavy use of technology in order to make it efficient.
Yeah.
So appreciate the call.
The markets have always been
okay.
Crazy.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck,
bye.
Linda. And she's a good point of just because you have an advisor, maybe your advisor is not doing the right job for you.
Yeah.
And you don't owe the advisor anything.
No.
And
her advisor wasn't listening to her. No.
Again, risk tolerance is one portion, but it's also based upon when you're going to need the money.
What the objectives of the dollars are.
So there's this whole concept, as you get older, you're going to need the money. Well, that's true for most of us, right? As we get older, we're going to take our savings and convert it into some retirement income. But for some who have access or for whatever reason, they don't need the money or even desire the money.
How many clients have you had where you said, look, it's not going to make a difference. I can aggressively invest this.
That's why I've seen some wealthy clients who say,
no risk.
I don't want any risk. Why do I need to take risk? I don't need to take risk, so I don't want any risk. I don't like the fluctuations. I'm not going to take it.
And then you see wealthy clients that have phenomenal amounts because they know that if the market pulls back,
doesn't matter.
That historically it's always come back and that they're going to be fine.
Correct. Yeah.
So the right portfolio is the one you'll stay invested in during the downturn. That's the right portfolio.
And we'll continue on with Bill. Bill, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
We recently went to one of these living trust seminars. And I wanted to get your opinion on whether, based on my circumstances, I really needed one or not.
Okay. All right. Tell us your circumstance.
Well, I'm retired, pushing the late 60s, and my wife is also retired. Just about all of our money is in IRAs. And we have two properties, one here in Roseville and one on the coast.
Okay.
And as far as cash is concerned, we just keep enough cash on hand that we pull out of our IRA every month for emergencies and stuff like that.
Bill, what are the values of the homes? The one in Roseville and the one on the coast?
Well, here in Roseville, it's probably about 400 large.
Okay.
And down on the coast, probably 500 large.
Okay. You need a trust.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. So, and the state of California can be a complicated, costly probate process. So the state of California, many people in the state of California could benefit from a trust. But really, when you get a living trust, you typically go through, spend some time doing some estate planning where you'll have a will that'll say, here's how the assets should be distributed. You'll have some other documents that'll provide a power of attorney. So should you or your wife, something happen and somebody's to act on your behalf from either a financial matter or also from a health care, you might particularly have a advanced health care directive as part of that whole package. So usually the retirement accounts will pass based upon beneficiary, regardless of what you state in your, right. your trust. So that's it's nice. Right. But the properties are something different entirely.
And you're
I did forget to mention that we have no kids and probably most of our money will go to grandnieces and nephews' education funds.
Okay. You still need a trust.
I mean, maybe
actually you need
maybe more so.
Even more so.
If you told me it was all going to go to the SPCA or whatever.
A charity, then actually what I would tell you is to contact the charity and they'll actually pay for the trust. But right. in your situation, because you have no children, you probably need it even more so that no one can contest it.
And I appreciate your situation, Bill. As, you know, as financial advisor, we've dealt with a number of some people over the year that don't have children and they have assets. And part of you is probably thinking, you know, why should I pay all this money for...
Correct. Like, why do I care?
Well, it's not... He cares, but it's like, why do I want to...
No, he just called us up to ask, why do I care? Is that why you called, Bill? I mean, let's cut to it.
That's a good point, though. I never thought of, because we had been looking at a couple of charities that we really like as well, and I had never thought of them setting up.
And they absolutely. So, if let's say
only if it all goes to them.
Right? No. If you said you were going to give 10% or whatever to a charity, they would be more than happy to do. And you might, you'd be probably best off to leave. Some of your retirement account, your IRA, not a property.
And the reason you would leave the IRA to the charity and not the property is because a charity doesn't pay any income taxes. So you leave the IRA to the charity, they get the money. You leave it to a niece or nephew, they pull the money out, they have to pay taxes on it. So if your objective is to pay the least amount of taxes possible, which, by the way, most people, that's their objective, you would actually name the charity as the beneficiary in the IRA. But if you went, so I'm the board chair of the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, and I have been for many years. If you came to me and said, hey, I want to leave $300,000 to the Sacramento Food Bank, by the way, it wouldn't be a bad idea, Bill. We would pay for the trust to be done.
Of course, you would for much less than that, too.
Correct. If you said I was going to leave $50,000, we would pay for the trust to be done.
If you want to leave, so you're in an interesting situation. Bill, if you were 10 years older, we'd probably be sitting a little harder. You should probably get this done. I mean, you're still relatively young. You might not feel that when you get out of bed in the morning. But doing some estate planning, I think, is important. And I would just encourage you, as you know, you're looking at this, as the pain to have to deal with an attorney and pay the fees. But maybe you and your wife can sit and kind of have some fun. It's like, look, here's these assets. Odds are we're not going to spend them during our lifetime. Don't know what's going to happen, so we don't want to give a bunch of money away while we're alive. But we'd like to help our nieces and nephews with college if possible. But what else could you do that can leave some legacy?
So, Scott, I went through this recently with clients of mine that for years and years they've been putting it off. They have no children. They were going to leave some money to their nieces and nephews. They had an estate pretty similar to yours, probably worth a couple million dollars when you added it all up. I suggested...
We got about 1.6 in IRAs.
So you're worth $2.5 million, according to the numbers here, the round numbers, you're worth about $2.5 million.
Yeah.
I suggested that they each make a list of five charities that they wanted to give money to and see if... independent of each other and see what matched, what they had, what charities in common. And then who they wanted the money to go to. And they each went their own separate ways, made this list, and then came back and compared the two. And then that's how they decided where the dollars would go. And some went to nieces and nephews and some went to charities. And they both went to the same college and the money went to the their college. But that's what my recommendation. You and your wife go to that house on the coast. You go there. She stays in Roseville. You make your list.
You make your list. You can share a nice weekend.
You make your list. You've been married a long time. It's time for a break.
And if you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. And sometimes sometimes people contact us and they don't have enough time right then, or we don't have time for them. We can schedule time. We do some of our recordings midweek.
Sometimes we do them in the evenings, too.
Sometimes we do them in the evening, and we can schedule a time to take your call. So if you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call 1-888-2-HANSON now, 1-888-2-HANSON, and we'll get your contact information. We can schedule a time to take your call on the air.
Easy.
We'd be happy to do so because, look, every week we see someone who's been taken advantage of, and we don't want that to happen to you. And when we come back from the break, we're going to play a clip from a voicemail that I got that I think will be quite insightful to give you a little window into what happens in some segments of our industry. So 1-888-2-HANSON is again the number. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking with us as we talk about financial matters. And I think we have a pretty interesting call I received.
Voicemail. We're going to play it for you.
Yeah. So a little backdrop. Our industry, and it's funny, this week I was talking with one of our advisors who one of his clients got sold one of these products, and we were talking about it by some sort of broker that had a bunch of disciplinary marks. And there's a way you can go do a broker search and see the history. And he says somehow he was able to hired someone to clean up his U4. So what are you talking about? He says, yeah, there used to be all these disclosures. They're not there anymore.
Yeah. There's firms out there that you can hire that clean up your... So somehow they go back and they dispute the claims.
So somehow he got his record kind of looking cleaned up.
Really?
Yeah. And I said to this advisor we're sitting there talking, I said, why? I said, it is so frustrating. I said, why does nobody care? Why does the Department of Insurance, that's in state, run in the states, why don't they care about these products? They said... We're talking about
index annuities here.
Equity index annuities. And
why do you think no one cares?
I think it's the lobbying's just too big. And I don't think people are they're taken advantage of, but maybe not that badly. So worst case scenario, you lose 15% of your money or something, a surrender charge.
Yeah, they're not getting stolen from them.
What happens is
if you talk to the people that buy the products, their understanding of how they worked isn't consistent with how they really
work. So we're going to play. So I don't typically get these kind of voicemails because we don't do any of these products and don't do this kind of business. But we're going to play a little voicemail that I received this last in the last couple of weeks.
Hi, Scott. It's been a little while since we last spoke, and I wanted to make sure that you were aware of the 11% commission product that's available in California. It has some fantastic features for your clients. In fact, it offers them a money-back guarantee. I also wanted to let you know about our exclusive leads that are averaging $400,000 in investable assets with an average age of 62. So call me when you get a moment, and I can go over those details with you. Thanks, and have a great day.
Okay, so this voicemail, let's call her Sue because we bleeped out her name. We debated or not, but it's like we didn't want to be sued over this first
time. But it had been a while since you had talked to her.
I've never talked to her yet. It's been a while. Never had talked to this person. Let's call her Sue. So she leads off with, what's the benefit?
To the broker,
11% commission.
11%.
Now, if you put money in an annuity and it paid the broker an 11% commission,
where'd that money come from?
You.
Yeah. It's actually more than 11%. And let me explain why that is.
Because she represented a company, not the insurance company.
Correct. And if you put $100,000 into one of these products and they pay the broker 11%, and let's say they say pay the wholesaler 1% or 2%, now that's 13%. Where did that money come from? Well, the insurance company actually goes out and borrows that money in order to pay the commission. Because all $100,000 of yours actually goes invested. So they go out and borrow money in order to pay the commission to the selling broker or agent.
There's a cost there, obviously.
There's a cost there. And they know that they're going to make up that cost of money over a period of years, sometimes 10, sometimes 8, sometimes 12, sometimes longer. How do they make that up? Well, what they do is they put a big surrender charge on your policy. My guess, I've never seen this product, but my guess is the surrender charge starts at 15%.
That'd be my guess.
Which means that I put my money in this index annuity and I take the money out in the first year. I put 100 grand in, and if I take it out in the first year, I only have $85,000 that comes to me.
Because they recoup the cost for the insurance company.
So what they do is they have high internal expenses over a long period of time in order to pay back the loan that they borrowed to pay the commission.
Here's why I hate these products. Is it possible there's some decent equity index annuities in the marketplace?
Possibly.
Possible. Possibly.
Probable?
My challenge is, one, it's the tremendous conflict that you as an investor are putting on an advisor or a broker when you're buying these products.
I don't understand what that means.
So let's pretend I'm your typical broker today. I'm not a fiduciary.
You're not dressed like that.
Not. Let's assume that either A, I really like money, so I have a lot, but I want a lot more. Or B, reality for a lot of people, I've got my own financial needs. I've got kids at home that have needs, all those things. And I know that I can offer a product with a low commission, maybe a 3% commission.
Which is less expensive to the client, less onerous getting out of the contract.
And the client would end up with a higher return over the long term because there hasn't been so much. But I just got a call from this lady named Sue, and she's offering an 11% commission. So this $100,000 that this client has, instead of making $3,000, I can make $11,000. This is the problem with these things.
But Scott,
remember, think about the financial crisis before that. All these subprime loans, they said a lot of the reasons people got into them is not because they needed them. It's because they had higher commissions paid to the brokers.
But so, Scott. So you know some index annuity sales guys are actually listening to our show. We know that because we get the nasty emails from them as to why we always rail on them. Their counter is, well, you charge a fee, Scott.
Correct.
What's the difference?
We charge a fee based upon our clients sticking around, and it's based upon what their account balance is as we journey together. So a client hires us today. If 6 months from now they want to fire us,
it costs them
nothing. I mean, just whatever fee that there was charged during that 6 month period of time, which is a fraction of that, right? A fraction of that.
But
every day we have to earn our clients' trust to keep them as clients. They're welcome to take their money any day they'd like without any surrender charges.
So, and in most index annuities, you put the money in, the broker gets paid, the agent gets paid all up front. Remember, I use the word agent because you actually don't need a securities license to sell many of these index annuities products. You don't even have to have a background in securities. You don't even have to have a solid understanding of, well, they a little bit now, the insurance test for the Department of Insurance in the state of California and many other states, actually, you have to have a base knowledge of how index annuities work. But the broker or agent most of the time gets paid all up front.
All up front.
Regardless of the outcome.
So you invest this money. It turns out that the performance was poor during that time. And the way these products work, the insurance company, I bet most of the people who sell these don't even read the specimen policies. The insurance companies have the power. The insurance companies are not in the business for losing money, just to let you know.
So what the insurance companies do,
and
if you were to tear these contracts apart and understand them, what they do is they take a large portion of the money and they put it in fixed income products. The income that comes off the fixed income products, they buy options on an underlying index.
Typically the S&P 500.
But they can buy options on other. That is an unwrapped. It is a strategy that has been around for years and years and years and years.
Theoretically, you could build that same strategy yourself without this big expensive insurance product.
Without big commissions, with almost no cost associated whatsoever. But when you read the contract themselves, because she used the word money-back guarantee. That's what she said.
If you leave the money there long enough, yes, you will get your money back. I will grant that. Also, if you take your greenbacks and you go to the safe deposit box and put them in there, you'll get your money back there as well.
That is correct.
But for the amount of money, the length you're tying your money up, it's crazy.
And the cost
associated with it.
Because
you're not going to get a high return on these things.
And
the way
cost
they're structured today.
Because of what they call the participation rate.
That and bond yields are low right now. Insurance companies, they're not going to be able to offer much higher return on these things.
That's what the financial services industry looks like. We see it day in and day out. We see the person that comes
this is
in.
Why we don't like equity index annuities. This is the problem when you work with someone who is a part-time fiduciary, doesn't always put your interest at first.
They're conflicted.
There's a huge conflict. If this broker, he's got several different insurance and equity index annuities. He's looking at his potential client across the table and thinks, if I lock their money up for 15 years, I can make 11%. This product, I'm only going to make 3%. Which one should I push today? Oh, this person has plenty of money.
We see the outcome.
We see the outcome. And we're going to throw this challenge out there. So if you are a financial advisor that sells equity index annuities, and you would like to debate this, you think, no, Scott and Pat of Hanson McLean are wrong on this. Equity index annuities are great for these reasons. We invite you to join us on this program.
All of you, if you're from an insurance company, if you're a wholesaler, if you want to debate the merits of your product.
Not today. We will set up a time. You let us know the product. We're going to research the product a bit. We will have an honest conversation on this radio program so other people can hear both sides of the story. We are welcoming that. And if you'd like to join us on that, simply call 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, or you can email that at info@moneymatters.com.
And this will be the annuity throwdown.
It doesn't get much more. Maybe we'll even get some music behind it. No, but it's a serious issue because we see people taking advantage of it. We see people, they go to these nice steak dinners and they get sold the product. They are only told one portion of it. They think they're going to have this great outcome. The reality is, for the most of the time, they don't have this great outcome. Money's locked up for years. And so we're going to open that challenge. So let's go to some phones now. If you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to Mary in San Jose.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. So my question is, I'm pushing 60. I'm 59 years old. I am out of job now, but I'm hoping to get another job soon. I own a property that I'm renting. It's worth near, let's say, $1.9 million.
Okay.
And I owe on it like $370,000.
Okay.
My rent pays for its payment, tax, and everything, and it gives me like I guess near $2,000 in cash, a little less than $2,000.
So what is the Mary? What's the gross amount that you receive in rent
per month?
About $4,500.
Okay.
$4,500 per month. Yeah. So. And I have a condo that I bought 3 years ago. It has appreciated about, I want to say, $150,000 on it. I owe on that condo $270,000.
And what's the value of the condo?
I want to say $550,000.
Okay. Keep going.
So my question is, shall I cash out some of my 401k and pay off my both properties? or shall I sell my condo, take the cash, and pay toward my house and move back to my house?
What is your plan? You know, so here's an interesting thing, Mary. You are in probably the most expensive real estate market in the country, right? San Jose's gone nuts.
Yeah.
You paid, when did you, your condo's worth $550 a day. What did you pay for it 3 years ago?
370.
All right, 370 and it's worth 550.
Wow.
In 3 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to see the same appreciation of this magnitude going forward. It's impossible, mathematically impossible. So you've had a tremendous run up, right? And the $1.9 million home, how big a home is that?
Four-bedroom, two-bath. Less than 2,000 square feet.
Less than 2,000 square feet. Probably a 40-year-old, 50-year-old ranch house or something?
Yeah.
For $1.9 million.
And tell us how much you have in your 401k. What's the...
I have less than a million. I have about 700.
Okay, and... So you said you're leaving one job and wanting to start another one. Elaborate on that.
I'm hoping. I'm applying.
Do you want to do that? Do you want to continue to work?
I got laid off. Yeah. That's what I'm asking you. I like to. Yes, I want.
You'd like to keep working.
Okay. Yeah, so because if we just do some quick numbers, you're worth about $2.5 million. Just adding up these three assets. Is that right?
Less the debt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one challenge, so I think your original question was, should I take the money in my 401k and pay off the mortgages? While that can be tempting to do, the challenge with that is if you cash in your 401k, it'll be like you earned $700,000 in one calendar year.
So we know the answer to that is probably not.
No, because your tax rates would be ridiculous.
But the bigger question is, what are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to achieve? Do you want to stay in the San Jose area? Do you want to?
Because I know there's a lot of Mary. We talked to a lot of people in your position. They're like, "Holy smokes! I've made so much money in real estate. Why don't I go move somewhere a little different? I don't have to move that far even to get a much better valuation in real estate, and then I'm financially set."
I don't want to pay a lot of taxes, and I don't want to move away from here.
Okay, well, that's the first answer is you don't want to move away from there. So the second answer to the question is, do you liquidate the 401k to pay these off? The answer is no, you don't want to do that. Do you move from?
You could just take your 59, almost 60. So if you're 59 and a half. You can take money out of your 401k as needed right now to bridge it over until you get another job.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that.
I have to pay taxes on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to pay taxes.
Much less than...
And the rules with 401k is different from an IRA, which is from a 401k, if you're 55 or older in the year in which you separate from service from a job, there's no penalty taking the money out of a 401k.
Even if you're not 59 and a half.
If you're 59 and a half... and the money's in an IRA, you can take money without a penalty. And you said you're 59 pushing 60. It doesn't matter as long as you're over age 55 when you separate from service.
Yeah.
So I would not look to drain the 401k to pay those mortgages off.
Actually, I would agree with Pat. What I would consider doing, if I were in your situation, I would consider doing an exchange on your rental home. Was that your primary residence? Yeah.
Not anymore. Okay. It's been rented for the past 3-4 years.
Okay. I would, if it were me, because you're getting, if you look at the gross yield, $4,500 a month on a, let's call it $2 million, that's a 2.25% yield for a real estate yield. That is really low.
Yeah, it's extremely low.
So in other words, you're not getting very much rent relative to how much, what the value of that property is. If it were me, I'd look at exchanging that into some other markets, maybe have four rentals and have a property manager. You could have much more cash flow out of that.
Or, Scott, selling it outright, paying the taxes on it and living on it, paying the...
She just said she didn't want to pay the taxes.
I know no one wants to pay the taxes. Have you met anyone ever that wanted to pay the taxes?
No, but I've certainly had enough people who called right before the financial crisis and didn't want to pay taxes on their real estate.
Yeah.
Only wish they had later.
Well, in terms of paying taxes, I have a lot of capital losses back in the days.
Mary, you know what you'd be best served with? You really should sit down with a good certified financial planner who can help you kind of map out what are Mary's options right now, right? Because you've got a number of them in front of you. So, and I think you called, should I take the 401k, cash it in, and pay off the house?
That's just
not going to work because of the way the tax laws work. But I think you should look at a number of different options. And then you could go back and then you could say, which one's going to work best for me? That's what we'd highly recommend.
Okay.
But do not cash out that 401k to pay off those loans. That is a certainty.
Well, I wasn't going to cash it all at once. I was going to take like $20,000-$30,000 a year and just pay off lower the bill and then, you know, until I'm
Well, there. It might make sense. It all depends on what your work's going to be like. So if you're planning on going back, like I said, I really think you'd benefit sitting down with a financial advisor.
I agree with Scott.
We've got couple great advisors in the Bay Area if you want to chat with one of us or talk with someone else you know. But, hey, Mary, we appreciate the call. We wish you most of success. You know what's interesting, Pat? If home values have gone in parts of the Bay Area, San Francisco, San Jose.
Crazy. I feel like I've seen this movie before. Do you ever feel that way?
I was talking to a buddy the other day. I said he's actually in the construction trades for building apartments in the Bay Area, right? Throughout the Bay Area. And I said, it'll be interesting what happens when technology goes through another recession. Because it has.
And it will.
Nobody knows when, right?
But it will again.
Everything goes through their cycles.
Yes.
And what impact that could have on real estate prices.
Scott, especially if you see what some of these technology stocks are trading at versus their revenue, not even their earnings.
Well, when you've got a roughly $2 million house that rents for $4,500 a month, there's a little imbalance there. Imbalance. Anyway, appreciate the call. And let's continue on with calls. We're talking to Raj. Raj, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Pat. How are you this morning?
Wonderful. How are you doing, Raj?
Good. I had a question about long-term care. I'm 48 years old, and I'm just past couple of years just looking into them. I know there's been a perfect storm between the interest rates and the claims with baby boomers going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been looking at the partnership long-term care, also long-term care insurance, and also the CalPERS long-term care. I have a sibling that works for the state, so I can get CalPERS long-term care.
Is that right?
Is that hilarious?
Is that right?
A sibling.
Yeah.
You got to love the state of California. The highest tax incomes. All they keep doing is raising taxes.
Oh, my gosh. That's just crazy.
Oh, you work for the state? Not only do you have benefits, but you have any siblings? Or siblings get
a neighbor?
Close friend?
I think your father-in-law, your mother-in-law, that they have a whole string of people that qualify.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so what's your question
for
you?
It doesn't cost the taxpayers a dime, Pat. I wouldn't worry about that.
As I'm Googling houses for sale in Nevada. I wonder if my wife would like living in this state.
If Elon Musk could get that hyperloop between Nevada and California.
Yeah, we'd be done.
Yeah.
So what's your question for us?
Excellent. Looking at those three, I'm not sure which one would be more beneficial. I know that the sweet spot to get the insurance would be between ages 50 and 55.
So here's how we view long-term care insurance, okay? If you look at most long-term care expenditures, they're for a shorter period of time. The average male is about a year. The average female is about 2 years.
That's average.
These are average. Now, if you do you plan for your retirement well, you could afford on your last year to be in a long-term care facility or the last 2 years, maybe the last 3 years. Where it's devastating is where it's a multiple-year stay, right? Where there's maybe early onset Alzheimer's or something where, those are the outliers, but that's where you need the insurance, right? Think of it like, it's the major issues in life that we need insurance, not for the minor things. So we think the best way to view long-term care is if you could have an extremely long waiting period. Some company had a 2-year wait period.
2 years.
And then a lifetime payment. Because a lot of policies are sold where it's maybe a 90-day waiting period, but it's capped at a couple years' worth of payments. And when you're thinking, well, I'm only buying a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of insurance. I could afford the couple hundred thousand dollars insurance. I'm worried about the $2 million claim.
And the longer the waiting period, think about it as like the
auto insurance.
Auto insurance. It's the deductible.
I have a $5,000 deductible on my auto.
Yeah.
And the reason I do is because I know one thing. I get an fender bender.
You're not going to submit the claim.
Because the rates go up.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to submit a claim unless it's a long
time. So that's the first thing to look at. The second thing to look at is the, obviously, how secure is the company that you're buying it from? And the pool of which you get to choose is relatively small compared to 15 years ago. There's just not that many players in the industry anymore. My guess is you're going to land on the one that allows you to buy it through the state. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Is that the way you're leaning?
Right. That's the way I'm leaning, but I need to get more information from them. I know I can mail away for a brochure to get more information. I did go on that areyoureadyca.gov for their long-term care information that they have on their website. But I'm still just not certain whether...
What's your income like?
I'm making about $220 a year.
What do you have in savings investments?
In my 401k, I have about $560. In my brokerage accounts, I have about $100.
Okay. $100K. And will you have a pension at retirement?
I will, but I'm not confident. I'm assuming there might be a soft freeze or a hard freeze.
Right, so it's not
going to
be 48. So, yeah, you're probably makes sense.
I don't
want to. You're probably
that.
A good candidate to buy long-term care insurance.
Yeah.
Okay.
That might be a wise.
And do you have any leanings? Do you have any leanings towards a partnership program or just?
You mean the CalPERS program?
No, the California State Partnership. I'm not an expert on that.
I don't know.
I'm not an expert on the California Partnership Program, so
I don't
can't speak to that.
I don't know.
Okay.
I would talk to someone who specializes just in long-term care insurance. And that's all the time we have for today's program. Visit HansenMcLean.com. If you'd like, we've got, we talked to this annuity wholesaler. If you'd like some more tips on this sort of stuff, we have a Retire Beware Workshop. Go to HansenMcLean.com. You'll learn more about our Retire Beware Workshop. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Join us next week, the same time, the same program. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.